Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
If you've got a green thumb, and by the way, if you do, I know a specialist, you'll really marvel at how simple a tool this is, and it can really save you hours of back-breaking work. Let's see. I'm about 100 yards off the green here. I'll try a five weasel. No more weeding on your hands and knees. You just gently glide your weasel. And by the way, it's been years since I've said that. You just glide the weasel in between your, let's say, plants. Look, Ma, I'm making valuable mulch. Oh. Hello, Mr. Hoffa. I hit Jimmy Hoffa. And the blades are removable for easy cleaning. And the patented tilling action digs deep into the soil and aerates all the way down to the roots. You know, here's something I don't understand. Weasels, aren't they rodents? Why would you name something after a rodent? I mean, think about it. It's not a nice thing. Why not just call it the Amazing Rat Stick?
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of The Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. To Mike, it's not just another banana peel, it's future dirt. Here he is, Mike Novak.
And happy Sunday morning to you. And it looks like, I don't want to be premature in this, it looks like spring might actually be about to happen. Of course, we'll have Mr. DeMaio tell us about that later in the morning. But it does seem like yesterday was not a half bad day. We got to take what we can get. And today's supposed to be halfway decent, and I don't know that there's any snow in the forecast.
Fortunately.
At least for the foreseeable future. Who knows? But we'll find that out. And I need to thank the wonderful folks. I did a couple of garden talks this week, one of which was at in Linn County, in Iowa, in Cedar Rapids, and the Linn County Master Gardeners were there, and that was fun. And then yesterday at the Clem Arboretum up in Rockford, and the people were great. And if you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and go to the homepage, just go to the homepage, you will see the photograph. Well, you'll see several photographs. The first one is a photo I took in Iowa. And it's this wonderful mural on a barn.
I loved it.
Grant Wood.
It was great.
And there's, I guess a guy named Mark Benish is doing this. One of my Facebook friends tracked down how that got there and posted it on Facebook. If you take a look at that, it's a mural on a barn, and it's just stunning. I'm driving by and went, whoa, I got to get that photo.
I love that you pulled over. I would do that. I would pull over.
And yeah. Oh, I do that absolutely. All the time. Yeah. It's, you know, sometimes even on the interstate. This was US 30. So it was easier. In fact, I turned around. I like shot past it and I went, what?
There's some great barns in Iowa.
Yeah.
And I went to Iowa State.
That's right.
Yeah,
you did.
So I know Iowa well. And those farmers, I think they get bored. They need something to do.
Well, art is art. And there's all kinds of places you can put art.
Well, this is exceptional.
It really is. And it's been, I put it up on Twitter. Everybody's retweeting it. I have it on Facebook. Everybody's sharing it. So it's kind of fun. And then the photo below that is the crowd, part of the crowd that was at the Clem Arboretum yesterday and Botanical Garden in Rockford. We did the talk, and they, you know, it was a beautiful day, and we were shut in, and I'm doing the talk, my talk, Guys on Grass, which is about lawn care, natural lawn care. And funny I should say that, because Melinda Myers will be here this morning to talk about that very thing in just a few minutes. And we were done, and I knew that, and I've tried it far too often, that if I try to take a photo inside, it'll be blurry and it'll just look terrible. So I said, okay, everybody out in the patio, we're going to do a group shot here.
What a great idea.
Yeah, why not? It was a beautiful day and most of the people came out and we took a group photo and it was really fun. So thanks to the folks at Clem and the folks in the Rockford area who came out. And I heard Robbie and Ron Cowgill yesterday talking about it. I let them know I was going to be there. And Robbie started coming up with a nickname for me, which is Novak on the Block. What she doesn't realize is that it's very close to what my nickname was on college radio. I was.
Oh, really?
Well, I was a rock and roll DJ on the Rock of Ann Arbor. That was WCNR. Broadcasting not even with it was carrier current. So you needed to have pipes in your dorm to be able to hear the station. But we called it. I'll send that to you, Denny. Thanks. That was the Rock of Ann Arbor. So I was Mike Novak on the Rock till 1 o'clock. And I even had a little jingle. So I suppose we could do Novak on the Block.
Do you still have the old jingle?
I fished out a CD that I think has it on there this morning and then left it at home, of course. That's the way those things work. So
that'll be a present for another
day. I'm going to try to bring that in here and see if I've got Mike Novak on the Rock till 1 o'clock. I know. When you're a rock and roll DJ, you got to have those. And the jingles, I created the jingles myself. I over-tracked some stuff. And they're actually kind of fun. I'm so mad at myself I left that CD at home. So I'm going to bring that in. So I might be playing the Novak on the Rock till 1 o'clock jingle at some point on the show. Today, as I said, Melinda Myers is here. You know, the good news today is that we're not talking about the end of the world. That's just such a relief. It's still coming. If you didn't catch last week's show, go to my podcast.
Well, so I was in Springfield this week, making sure that doesn't happen. My tiny little effort
with our General Assembly.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But so you went to the lobbying day on the 3rd.
I was there for Environmental Lobby Day with Sierra Club, Illinois Environmental Council, Faith in Place. A whole bunch of folks showed up. I was representing Illinois Solar Energy Association. We're working hard on the RPS, the Renewable Portfolio Standard. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other bills we're working on, a fracking bill and a few other things. Frack Free Illinois was there. So a lot of work going on in Springfield.
Yeah. you guys get the ear of any of those people regarding fracking and what the IDNR is doing to torture that law that was passed last year?
There is a lot of work on it. Dr. Laura Chamberlain was there. A number of other people were there working on. There's, you know, probably a good, I think, 13 bills that are proposed. It might even be 15. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of efforts trying to work on that bill. You know, the bill is still, the bill that passed last year is still in rulemaking, so it still hasn't come out completely. And I apologize for my voice. Yesterday, I actually lost my voice.
So because you were shouting at legislators? Is that what it was? Were you screaming in the face of legislators?
That was it. Mike Madigan and I went down.
Yeah.
No, I've just been speaking at a lot of things and been sick. So I was at a really great event yesterday, which was a faith-based climate conversation. And it was called Connections in Action. So I was putting a lot of groups together. So there was somebody there from the Water Reclamation and Harper College, and it was being moderated by Jerome McDonnell from BZ. So it was a fun day. It was a long day, but that's very fun day.
And the reason I wasn't asked to moderate was?
Because he's a church member at the event.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, good. See, I would have nothing to do with that.
And I wasn't the organizer, and you were in Iowa.
That's true, too. Yeah, the last couple of days have been a little crazy. Been a little out of control. So on the show, Melinda Myers starts off. We're going to talk a little natural lawn care, maybe how to treat some weeds without reaching for the chemicals. Wouldn't that be a nice thing? We're going to squeeze in a lot today. Vicki Nowicki is going to be here. She is from Liberty Gardens, and she's a permaculture expert. She and her husband, Ron, have been doing permaculture out in Downers Grove for 35 years. I mean, before anybody knew what it was. And they're doing a seed, I said seed starting, but it's seed sharing library.
Ooh.
Which is starting, you know, I wrote seed starting. That doesn't make any sense there. Seed lending library, actually, in Downers Grove. And that's going to start next Saturday. And they've got 3,000 packets of heirloom and open pollinated seeds. And the idea is you come in, you borrow some seeds, you grow the plants, you harvest the seeds, you bring those back. And so you're just borrowing seeds and then bringing more back at the end of the season. And that's the goal, to make that happen. It's kind of cool. Second hour, Robert Colangelo. Some people may be familiar with him at Chicago's Progressive Talk. He had a show on here for a while called Green Sense Radio. Now, Green Sense Radio still exists, at Chicago's Progressive Talk. Actually, there's a minute version of it on WBBM, and there's a full form version on it and at various places. You can go to greensenseradio.com. And it's not his radio show that I'm talking to him about today. It is his new farm, which is an indoor farm. And it's, I've been there. I've seen it. It's unbelievable. This may be the future of farming in America. We will talk to him about that. And then finally, and like I said, a lot of folks on the show today, Kate Sackman, who's the founder and president of EcoMyths. I like the idea, you know, the idea of an organization dedicated to busting environmental myths. And even, and on their webpage, I was looking at it just yesterday, and one of the myths that they bust is leaving grass clippings on the lawn causes thatch. And I was kind of amazed that they would go there. They're like me. It's like from the sublime to the ridiculous. I cover the end of the world, and I cover grass thatch as well. How sad is that? You know, it's really hard to talk to people about thatch after you've talked about the end of the world. You know, and dandelions, how they're going to get rid of dandelions in their lawn. I'm like,
probably like, I don't care. At that point,
I don't care.
You've lost your
That's the problem is I don't care. They want to get rid of dandelions. I'm thinking, well, what's it going to matter in 10 years when everything collapses? So, okay. So that's all today on the show. And we should get it started. So I hope you stick around, and we will do it right now.
Celebrate Earth Month with WCPT and a live on-location broadcast of the Mike Novak Show at the Green Metropolis Fair on Sunday, April 27th at the Irish American Heritage Center on Chicago's North Side. You'll enjoy workshops on organic gardening and sustainable living, yoga classes, activities for kids, great food, and a retail marketplace filled with hundreds of ecological products and services. Admission and parking are free. So what do you think, Mike? Did we cover it all?
Hold on there, Mr. Announcer Dude. You neglected to mention the website, greenmetropolisfair.com, and my showtime, which is every Sunday from 9 to 11 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, and that during the live remote broadcast, I'll have a number of great guests from the fair to talk about sustainable living and gardening. Other than that, I think you did okay. I'll give you an 8.5 out of 11. I mean 10.
Okay, good. So join us at the fair, and who knows, Mike might even put you on the radio. Learn all about it at greenmetropolisfair.com. That's greenmetropolisfair.com.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Hello, do-it-yourselfer. Ever thought about gardening? If you can build that window box, you can build a raised bed in your backyard. Bonnie veggie and herb plants in raised beds make a fast weekend project with a big payback. Fresh, grow-em-yourself tomatoes and peppers, kale, basil and thyme, and so much more. Bonnie plants are healthy and strong and help jumpstart your garden. So get growing. Plans and how-tos at bonnieplants.com.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it? You make it work for you.
In the Green Room with Mike is brought to you by Christy Weber Farm and Garden at CWFNG.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
And it's time to bring in my buddy and fellow horticulture communicator. That's what they call us, don't they, Melinda?
Yes, that sounds very much more important than what we do.
We are communicators.
Better than others.
And Melinda is the star of stage, screen, radio.
Just don't ask me to sing and dance or we'll all be sorry.
Well, that I was just going to cue something up and turn you loose for a while here.
Well, that'll end your show. I'm sorry, Mike.
You know, it's bad enough when I sing on the show. It really is. It's great to have you back, Melinda. Of course, what you want to do is just go to her website to see everything she does, melindamyers.com. And she spells it M-Y-E-R-S, her last name, just to confuse you.
Yes, exactly. That branch of the Myers has decided to stand out and be different. And I've had people tell me my father taught me to spell my name wrong, but I'm going with Dad on this one.
I have the same problem with Novak and E&L pronouncing the W as a V and the soft A, and people go, what? What? What's that? Melinda just came out with we talked in December. Usually we go 6 months, a year before, between times when we chat. But you were here in December because your brand new book had just come out, the Midwest Gardener's Handbook. And I bet you've autographed a lot of copies since then.
I have. In fact, they're in their second printing right now. So we're hoping that the next batch will be out and delivered soon. So they're still available through Amazon and at bookstores. But the good news was that thanks to your help and all those great gardeners out there in the Midwest, that the first printing sold out and
wow.
had to do another run. So I think that speaks that this long winter... I'd like to believe it's me, but the reality is I think this long winter sure has helped with book sales and appearances and audiences, because we're all dying for spring, a little bit of sign of greenery, some flowers blooming. You know, I've seen a few leaves coming up. I was in Ohio, and there were some daffodils and crocus blooming, and, you know, I just think we're all so ready.
I believe we are, and unfortunately, you live in Wisconsin, and it's, you know, there's barely anything stirring. You know, here I was yesterday, Thursday in Iowa, yesterday at Rockford, talking natural lawn care. I had a guy come up to me yesterday in Rockford, and he's a lawn care guy. He has been in the business for a while, and he says, what's happening now are the stir-crazy people are out in their yards, and they're furiously raking frozen ground, hoping something will happen. Have you seen that?
Yeah, and one of the things that if you take a leaf rake as the soil thaws and the ice and the snow disappear, you fluff up your grass, and you reduce the risk of snow mold, not raking into the frozen soil, but lightly as that soil thaws out, lifting it and fluffing it. But you're right. I have people that are like, I don't care. I'm going out. I'm doing something.
I don't care.
You know, you can clean up your winter interest. If you're like me, I still have, you know, sedum standing and my ornamental grass is up, and I still have birds visiting, eating seeds. So I'm not rushing out there to clean things up, because the wildlife is really hungry and looking for food. And so if you feel the need, you know, it's time for some renewal pruning maybe for things that are overgrown, but only if you need to. So you're right. We could start seeds indoors. I had a friend once that said he kept a bag of compost in the garage just for years like this so he could go out and run his fingers through it. You know, that's desperation, but it kept him from doing stupid things in the lawn before their time.
Uh-huh. And I'll tell you, was out there. If you saw my lawn, and maybe you had the same thing, because there was so much snow, when the snow melted, it was flat like a pancake.
Exactly.
And all the leaves were flattened right into it. And I've been doing the same thing you have. As the snow recedes, fluff it up. I realized looking yesterday, there's a part I hadn't gotten to yet, and I want to do that. But it really does help defeat snow mold, eh?
Yes, it certainly does. And then getting those leaves off, I don't care. When I was living in the city, I always had leaves. I would rake, I would shred, put them as a mulch, use those leaves. But it never failed that when spring came and the snow disappeared, there were more leaves under the snow.
Yeah.
And getting those off, that's a great way to prevent disease problems. Reuse those leaves, compost them, use them as mulch, but get them off the grass, because that will reduce the problem of snow mold and other diseases. And there's a lot of things that we can do that burn calories, that improve the health of our lawn without negatively impacting the environment. And I think that's, you know, I think the days of golf course quality lawns in our front yard, way too much work, way too many chemicals, and really not needed. You can still have a nice green patch of grass to make for your kids to play in, to help your garden stand out, and be kind to the environment. You know, tolerate a few weeds. They're at least green when it's hot and dry and dormant.
You know, it's true. Ron Coghill, who does Mighty House here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, says... He started using organic products on his lawn, and he says in the middle of the summer, when everybody else around him is brown, his stuff is green. I said, well, is it, you know, really nice turf? He said, well, there's weeds in there, too. They're everything, and it's all green. But at least his is green, and he doesn't
right.
have to water excessively. And that's part of what natural lawn care is about. It's fewer inputs. We, as you said, golf course type front yards, or worse, the people who tell you can have Wrigley Field in your backyard. That's so destructive. That's so dangerous.
You bet. And it's a lot of work. And you know, I was laughing when I was listening about the eco mythbusters. And, you know, I think you probably feel the same way I do. Really, people are still worried about grass clippings causing thatch? You and I have been talking about this for 30-some years.
True.
Either one of us. And really, there's it was either Rutgers or Cornell did research, and they found that just by leaving your grass clippings on the lawn, they're going to break down, add nutrients, organic matter, all those good things. But they saw a huge reduction in weed occurrence just by that simple act. Add a fertilization, of course, I'm going to say with Milorganite, once a year, and you can reduce your weeds by 50%, according to research from UW-Madison. So using an organic nitrogen fertilizer like Milorganite, especially slow release, leaving your clippings, those two acts can greatly reduce your weeds. And that's all you're doing. And then the good news is there are some good products out there if you really need to take it one step further that are natural.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Milorganite. Obviously, they're a great sponsor on my show, and you represent them so well. And I had people asking me about it yesterday out in Rockford. You know, it's the... And you get this, too, probably less than I do, because I think people associate you with Milorganite over the years. But people give me what I used to call the Milorganite question. And I've done my research. You helped me do this research. You came up with me when I did the tour of the Milorganite plant in Milwaukee. And I think this is the way we need to be going to deal with our waste stream and come up. You know, it's a win-win. You get rid of that and you come up with this great product where the quality of it is so good. There's it's organic and there's even some iron in it.
Right.
Which you don't get in other products. And I'm convinced. I'm sold, and I'm glad that and happy to recommend it to people to use, especially on their lawns.
You bet. And one of the things they found is because there's when the micronutrients work on the Milorganite to release the nutrients, it releases some of the phosphorus and potassium bound up in the soil, and a lot of that's from years of 10-10-10, 12-12-12, fertilizing, giving our plants phosphorus in quantities they don't need, and it holds into the soil and it's not plant available, so we add more and make the problem worse. And excessive levels of those two nutrients can interfere with the uptake of others. So we get an added value by getting some of that available to the plants for the plants to use, so it's a double benefit. Plus, one of the cool things Milorganite's doing now is they're using methane gas for kiln drying. They kiln dry the byproduct. They're basically micronutrients that have eaten up that byproduct of the wastewater treatment. They kiln dry it so it's pathogen-free, but they're piping methane from a nearby landfill, reducing their fossil fuel consumption. So I think that's, to me, that's very exciting. They've been around 87 years, being green before it was kind of the rage, and
yeah,
they're trying to continue reducing the any negative impact on the environment with energy use as well.
Yeah, it's a great thing. All right, we've got about 5 minutes left here, and one of the things that I talked about in the last couple of days when I was doing my talk on natural lawn care, and I know you addressed this, is how to deal with weeds in a less a less harmful way, I guess is the way to put it. And where I start with that, and I'm wondering if you agree with me, is as I tell people, I choose process over product every time. Uh-huh. And the process is make your lawn healthier. And if your lawn, if the turf grass is healthy and has deeper roots and is taller, you cut it higher, you're going to shade out and outcompete the weeds. Is that a direction you go in, Melinda?
You bet. And when weeds occur, the next step, and probably when you take, so do all the things, mow high, mow frequent, leave your clippings. But then the next step is if you still have weeds, then there's something in the growing environment that's better for weed growth than your lawn. Clover, for example, is only a weed because we've decided it's a
weed. Oh, yeah. Stop right there. Clover, you know, that's where I say, is clover a weed? And nobody in the room better tell me it's a weed, okay?
I love clover. It's the best part of the yard to walk on.
Well, and as we've talked about before, clover's great. It's tough. It withstands compaction. It stays green. It provides pollinator-attracting flowers.
It brings magic.
Well, no, it brings nitrogen. Which is almost magic.
When you're five, it's magic.
Yep.
And that's exactly what it's indicating. If you've got a lot of clover, you may want to. And if you don't buy this, I'm all with you guys. I'd rather the bunnies eat the clover than the hostas, right? The bees come and pollinate. It is wonderful. Growing up, don't you remember looking for four-leaf clovers?
Yep.
You know, kids need that. But if you decide, don't kill it. Just increase the fertilization in your lawn one extra time, and you'll still have clover, but a lot less. It's doing good things for your lawn. Moss is a great example. You can kill it, but it's coming back if you don't improve the drainage, increase the sunlight, and do all of that.
Well, but that's another one, Melinda. I say you've got moss. Why do you want to kill it? It's green. You don't have to mow it. It looks great.
And the other thing is, it's hip and trendy right now. I tell people are paying to buy that thing you're trying to kill.
Yes.
Embrace it. Be hip and trendy. You have a moss garden.
Or you could cut it up and sell it.
That's true. Get an extra blender, make a little few milkshake, moss milkshakes.
Exactly. But the big one, one of the big ones, is dandelions. And one of the things, I just read this the other day. For one thing, dandelions are all weeds. They're, as you said, they're telling you something about your soil. They are messengers, and you don't shoot the messenger. You find a way to deal with the messenger. In terms of dandelions, they're telling you about calcium in your soil, from what I understand. And I read this thing recently where a guy had this big patch of dandelions, and he said, I'm not going to use weed killer on it. I'm going to increase the calcium in that area. And sure enough, a lot of the dandelion population went way down.
Yeah, and one of the things you may want to do, though, is soil tests first. We typically in this area have plenty of calcium, and it may have worked very well for him. And that's one of the things we're always, you know, is it the calcium or was it something else? So a soil test is a great place to start.
Yes.
That'll tell you exactly what you need. And they can test for calcium. Also, compaction. Dandelions are big. Aeration is a great tool, but you only use it if you need to. Too often, I have people doing aeration every year, twice a year for a decade, and I'm like, well, then it's not working. Unless you're in an athletic field, you don't really need to core aerate every year, twice a year for 10 years. Something's not working. So if your soil's compacted, if you have more than a half an inch of thatch, it breaks through the thatch, it helps with compaction, and that really helps with a lot of your weed problems because they can tolerate that compacted soil better than our bluegrass and fescues.
Yeah.
So aeration is a good tool, but only if you need any of these things, only if you need...
Right, and you're right about the calcium. You really need a soil test first. That's where you start. You start
right.
with a soil test. You look to see if you have compacted soil. And if it's compacted, you might do some core aeration. After you do your core aeration, add some compost, which will go into the holes there that you've created. Then overseed. A lot of people think that their lawn is going to spread naturally, and they never bother to overseed. And that's another way to outcompete the weeds. If you have more turf plants, they're more likely to outcompete the weeds there, too.
You bet. And if you do some seeding this spring, don't use your corn gluten meal. That's a seed germination preventer, good and bad, because it will help. It will prevent your good grass from germinating as well as the weeds. It's
yeah.
a great tool. University of Minnesota, it was introduced by Iowa, the research was done, but Minnesota found if you do a spring and fall application of corn gluten meal, after 3 years, you can reduce your weeds by 80%. So all those good care tactics will help.
Yeah.
That's usually where I go. And if a lawn is in bad shape and someone doesn't have the patience, then we'll step it up with some corn gluten meal to prevent the seeds from germinating.
The only drawback with corn gluten meal is that because corn prices have gone up, corn gluten meal has also
it's
gone
expensive.
Up in price.
Good point. It is expensive. But, you know, so, unfortunately, once you get into any of the organic products, at this, when they're newer in the market and those kind of things, they do tend to be a little pricier, but it's a trade-off. And that's why I think it helps us use them only as we need to, which is what we should be doing with any kind of product, nor organic or natural, or natural, or if you choose a synthetic option.
That's Melinda Myers, M-Y-E-R-S. You can go to MelindaMyers.com, or better yet, just go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. I've got her link there. I've got the link to the Midwest Gardener's Handbook, which she is still selling. I've got the link to the Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide, the Michigan Getting Started Garden Guide, and Month by Month Gardening Minnesota and Wisconsin. Unbelievable. You put all those books out at the same time, and I have my one lowly book. Lonely.
I'm very excited about that, though. So that's congratulations. The first one's always the hardest.
Right. You need a seed. That was your seed.
That's my seed.
That's
Attack of the Killer Asparagus. We reached our Kickstarter last week. We reached our goal, which was really cool. And you will get a personally autographed copy of that, Melinda.
I would love that, and I will help plug it because I know everyone will enjoy reading it. And I'm so excited for you that I meant to email you so now I can tell you in person. Congratulations. That's great. And I just want to invite anybody not to take the thunder away from your great accomplishment. I'll be at Pasquazi's Lake Bluff store next weekend to talk about wildlife, attracting those you want, and keeping the ones, minimizing the damage from the ones that you'd like to keep at bay. Just look at, but not have munch on your whole landscape.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you brought that up. You don't happen to have the address. Oh, wait, here, I do. Wait.
Oh.
I think I've got it right here. Here we go. Pasquazi, April 12th. You will be there. That's at 975 North Shore Drive in Lake Bluff. So head up to Pasquazi. And then, wow, you're off to the annual Southern California Spring Garden Show on the 24th. Well, la-di-da.
Oh, I know. But then I'm back in at Morton Arboretum doing a flavorful landscape workshop. And you can still sign up. The series started in early March, but you can do individual classes. And mine is the Flavorful Landscapes, and it's that, I think it's April 26th,
yep.
Last Saturday.
9:30 to noon.
Yeah.
And this is all on Melinda Myers' website, MelindaMyers.com, M-Y-E-R-S. Melinda, always great talking to you.
Great chatting with you. I look forward to your book, and I will help you get the word out because I'm very excited because you have great, fun stories to share with all of us.
Well, so. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I will take you up on that.
Okay.
All right.
Take care, you guys. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
From simple to gourmet, nothing's fresher or tastier in recipes than homegrown, vine-ripened veggies and savory herbs. Do you grow your own? With Bonnie Plants, a kitchen garden at your back door or in containers can produce an amazing harvest for cooking and for sharing. Find how-tos, plans, and more at BonniePlants.com. Your recipes might not change, but your results sure will. Fresh, healthy Bonnie veggies and herbs. Get growing.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-LUNG-LAW. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
If you want a great lawn, and we were just talking about great lawns, you also need great seed. You need the right seed. That's where Bonide comes in. Their DuraTurf grass seed mixes use the best varieties of grass seed for your growing conditions. When you start using Bonide's full sun and shade or dense shade grass seed mixes, you'll have a lawn that is self-repairing and resistant to disease and grass nasty insects. These grasses will even grow in soil. that isn't perfect, and a lot of us have less than perfect soil. Bonide's DuraTurf grass seed mixes are special formulations to meet your lawn's needs. Bonide's Full Sun Mix, for example, combines fine textured blades with durable heat resistance. The Dense Shade Mix is ideal for seeding under trees, but again, don't seed it right up to the tree. Please don't do that. That's just a bad idea. So start planting this year's lawn right now. Now you will find Bonide's DuraTurf grass seed at these fine stores: Pesci's Garden Center in Des Plaines, Karp's Garden and Feed Center in Hobart, that's in Indiana, and Alsip Home and Garden in St. John's, also in Frankfurt. Or visit Bonide.com to locate a retailer near you.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
In the Green Room.
You dig?
In the Green Room with Mike has been brought to you by Christy Weber Landscapes at ChristyWeber.com, right in your own backyard.
Had to make sure I got that in. And with that, let's go back to the phones and bring in very quickly Vicky Nowicki, who is... who's been doing the permaculture thing for a long, long time, and I'm very excited about your new project. This just seems like such a cool idea. seed lending.
I didn't think of it. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I jumped on the bandwagon or the seed wagon or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I've been working with homeowners for 35 years, and I have heard them become so exasperated over time, asking me, what can I do to solve the problems that we have gotten ourselves into? And really, the question has become more and more frustrated as time goes on, and has built up to a big general sort of question, which is, how shall we live now that we're facing this horrible global climate disruption, climate change? And the second question that comes from that is, what shall we live for? And I always answer the question with, look at your food supply. This is something that we're facing much quicker than most people think. Food shortages, water shortages. And what the most serious of which is that we have lost diversity in our food supply. And now, even worse than that, we're losing the quantity of that diversity. So if I can explain, about 100 years ago, everyone lived at home. They had their own food supply in the form of seeds. They grew their food, they cooked their food, and they saved the seeds from it. And gradually, over the years, people left home. They didn't think that anything would happen to the seeds that their parents and grandparents held. Gradually, we formed hybrid seeds, GMO seeds, and now today, 95% of that diversity of food has been lost forever. And so today, with a little bit of heirloom and open pollinated seeds that we still have left, now these are the only seeds that will come back as kind of like a photocopy of what they were last year. These are the only seeds that we can save and replant the next year. We want to do something to preserve and save these seeds. And so there's been a movement going across the country to start these libraries, which will check out seeds just like books. And the purpose of it is to start to stockpile seeds within communities, just like families used to do in communities. So the immigrants, when they came, they always had their own supply of seeds. The natives that were here, when the immigrants came, had their own supplies of seeds. There weren't even any seed companies or garden centers to buy seeds, even if they had the money to buy seeds. So here's how it works. On opening day, if you want to become a member of this seed library, you show up. Everything's free. It's free to join. All you have to do is register your name, and then you will have to watch an introductory orientation program, which teaches you for free how to save seeds, because we want pure seeds coming back.
And this is in Downers Grove. Now, can it be anybody? You don't have to live in Downers Grove.
Anybody who wants to be a part of this quote unquote community of seed stockpilers. And so you will get free seeds. You will get free education throughout the summer, because we are going to teach you everything you need to know about all the different types of seeds. There's beginner seeds. There's intermediate seeds, which are a little more difficult to save. And then there's the crowning glory seeds like corn, which are more difficult to save.
And you're going to let people take, what, five varieties?
Five varieties. They're going to sign out the ones they take. And they're also going to be asked to sign a promise that they will take the seeds home and grow them. And they'll harvest most of what they take, and they'll leave a couple plants to go to seed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lettuce seed, for example, will make about 100,000 seeds. So if they take 20 lettuce seeds and they let, say, one of the plants go to seed, all they have to do is bring back 20 seeds, and they get to keep 99,000. 980.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
But the idea is they have to learn how to harvest, and you're going to teach them how to do that.
We're going to teach them everything. We're going to plant seed gardens where they can come and practice harvesting.
Yeah, I saw that. You're going to do that. You've got that out in Downers Grove also, where they can come and you'll teach them in the garden. And as you said, you can practice this. It's just a wonderful idea. And
we're really excited. And so we're going to put the seeds back into the hands of the people.
And you find out more about this by going to my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. But you can also go to LibertyGardens.com.
That's correct.
LibertyGardens.com, and it's right there on the homepage. Two o'clock next week, Downers Grove Historical Museum, 831 Maple Avenue, 2 p.m. And I understand you said you have almost 3,000 packets of heirloom and open pollinated seeds ready to be lent out. This is such a great idea, Vicki.
It really is. I'm so excited. Thanks, Mike, for letting me tell about it.
No problem. And we'll talk more about this in the future. I knew it was going on next Saturday. I wanted to squeeze you in here, and I'm glad that we were able to do that. All right. Take care,
okay.
Vicki.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thanks, Mike.
Keeping you from enjoying gardening, Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
I know what you're thinking. You're wondering when spring will finally arrive in Chicago. We're going to find out in just a second with Rick DeMaio. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's today, or maybe this is just a fake out. We have no way of knowing, but that doesn't mean you can't pick up the March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine and hope that a miracle will happen. At the same time, you can get some answers in Adele Klein's Q&A column, like, when is the time to transplant woody plants? Or what flowers can I grow to attract butterflies, bees, and hummingbirds? Or how can I get rid of chipmunks in containers? Heck, I know the answer to that. Don't open the container. I said, don't open the container. Thank you very much. wait a second. I'm getting a message in my earpiece. Ah, they're talking about gardening containers. Silly me. By the way, there's my column on the inside back page. Wait, I'm getting a message in my earpiece. Really? My column? Oh. All right, pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine at locations all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And at this time, we go to the phone to bring in the man, the legend, the meteorologist, Rick DeMaio. How are you, Rick?
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Sorry about your Badgers last night.
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. Don't worry about it. Though, you know, it was one of those things where when you get that close and it gets all the way to the point where you lose on the last second, you say, well, how much more can you put out there, right?
I know, and Michigan lost to the same team in exactly the same way last week.
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring that up, you being a Detroit guy.
Yeah.
But it was really pretty much. I think the only people that are happy about it are the Madison area and University of Wisconsin campus police. It'd probably get the celebration on State Street down to a dull roar.
But, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, we got sunshine. You know, are we going to get some spring maybe a little bit?
You know what? Spring sprung on Monday when we hit a high temperature of 68 degrees. And who would have thunk that after the winter that we have, opening day weather for the White Sox would be 68 degrees.
Yeah.
And you got to go all the way back to the last time we had a 60-degree day was on that fateful day, the 17th of November. We had all those tornadoes, and we actually had a high of 69.
Wow.
Yeah. So you go literally 4 months with, you know, some of the worst winter weather we've ever had. So one of the things I wanted to do was to kind of recap our winter a second time, being that I think we can finally say winter is kind of out of our skins. I guess that's kind of one way of saying it. It was interesting because the Weather Service actually put out a really great study, which was talking about not so much the climatological winter, but the winter that was, which really went from the 1st of December to the end of March, when you really think about it.
Mm-hmm.
That period, Mike, of December, January, February, March turned out to be the coldest 4 month period from December to the end of March ever in the history of Chicago. That's pretty amazing stuff.
That is. That's brutal.
Go ahead.
I know all my solar installers would agree with you.
That's true. Because they're trying to get
anybody
that stuff
working
done.
Outside. I mean, people right now, boy, they're scrambling. Big construction companies breaking ground. People are way behind on construction projects right now.
Yeah.
You can't do concrete in these temperatures.
Right, but it was interesting, Lisa, because I was at the Fermilab Tornado Seminar yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
I was talking with Tom Skilling and Louie Uccellini, who is the director of the National Weather Service. He is literally the president of the National Weather Service. And also Russ Schneider, who is the director of the Storm Prediction Center. And it was an amazingly comprehensive 5.5 hours of discussion, and they did it not once but twice. And one of those speakers was Dr. Don Weebles from University of Illinois, who was part of the original IPCC committee that was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Mm. Well, the Nobel Prize for Science, I should say. And he gave a very stirring discussion about the effects of climate change on agriculture. And some of the things I would have to say openly I kind of disagree with. But that's okay. That's what scientists are meant to do, is to disagree. And even myself and Dr. Uccellini, the director of the National Weather Service, were disagreeing about how the beginning of this winter was. But it was interesting that people come there to listen to information about being safe during severe thunderstorms and tornadoes, and yet you can still give them information about climate change. And It's not like there's any debate about it. There was just very open discussion about it. And I think it was a great forum for people to be educated, and it was well received. And I hope that people go out there again next year.
And you disagree with the guy who was on my show last week because you shot me an email. It was Guy McPherson, and you said this guy's a dingbat or something.
No. I don't think I used that term. It was close to that, though. I just think Guy just was a little bit, you know, off the deep end in what he was saying on a bunch of
things.
He's
just at one end of the spectrum, you know?
And you're not going to win any people over by doing that. And the thing about it is the discussion that went on yesterday at Fermilab was all about, here's the science, here's what we think is going to happen, and this is what we think you can do to protect yourself. It's not like you don't go outside and it's the end of the world, or you know, you're going to have economic disaster, anarchy, but it's something that we need to be more attuned to. So when you look back at what happened this last winter, and one of the things I wanted to share with you is, you know, temperatures in the month of December, 4.5 degrees below normal, January 8.1 degrees below normal, February 10.4 below normal, March 6.2 below normal, and even though we ended up with 80.6 inches of snow, which is the third snowiest ever for the city, we ended up getting 9 inches of precipitation out of that. That was a good thing, and I think the fact that it didn't melt in such a hurry keeps us obviously from getting any flooding rains out of this, but it's more or less learning how to live with some of the changes and some of the high degrees of variability that we're going to be coming more used to with climate change, rather than just kind of fight it and stick our heads in the sand and saying that, you know, the end is near, which is, I think, what Guy was talking about last year. And that's not a very what I would say, a prudent, honest approach.
Or productive, I would think, maybe.
Productive as well. Yeah. Because what's going to happen is you're not going to really win over anybody who's saying, huh? What? What do you mean about that? Anyway, that's a discussion for another time. But other than that, Mike, it was interesting to note that the discussion that did come up several times is that we've noticed that things are becoming more or less in a, quote, quasi-stationary pattern, meaning that when it gets a certain way, it stays that way. We were talking about things like flash drought, extensive periods of wetness, areas where you may get just dry weather. Everybody is talking about the extensiveness of the drought. You know, out in California, here we had one of the coldest winters on record, and you had places like Las Vegas and Phoenix and Tucson, which had one of the warmest winters on record, and the entire state of California had not only one of the warmest, but one of the driest. And that's where you have areas where you literally have probably half of the agriculture in the United States produced during the off season in that region. And those are the things we have to be more concerned about. Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what. I want to talk about this a little more. Let's spill this over into the 10 o'clock hour for just a couple of minutes, because I want to introduce you to Robert Colangelo as well. Give us a forecast for those people who need to get out just before 10 o'clock, and we'll come back right after the news.
Yeah, absolutely. Sunny today, 50, rain tomorrow, and it looks like cooler weather in here for the middle of the week. We'll talk more about next week and then the next report, Mike.
That's it? Some rain and then it gets cool?
Yeah, then it gets cooler like Wednesday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But if we hit 60 on Wednesday, that'll be the first time in a week and a half. We may not hit 60 again for another week and a half. So cool April without a doubt is heading towards us.
Okay, hang on a second. We'll talk to you right after the news and talk more about the long-term effects of climate change. And I think Robert Colangelo will be eager to join us in that discussion. And I hope you stick around, too.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
That crazy Rick DeMaio. He probably went out to get a cup of coffee, but we're going to get him back in just a second. Welcome to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk. And as I mentioned earlier, I just want to say this again, we reached the Kickstarter goal of $5,000. Yeah, wait a second. We need, I know, I can play this. All right. And actually bumped over it a little bit. It was really nice. I think we hit 58.75 was our final. And that means that we're going to publish my very first book, Attack of the Killer Asparagus, and perhaps even in color. There's a bonus for you. My thanks to everybody who contributed. I think we had all told like 103 folks who jumped on board. And we will keep you posted. Kathleen Thompson, who is the editor with Around the Block Press, and I will be working on this, and we will keep you posted. In the studio with me right now is Robert Colangelo from Green Sense Farms, Green Sense Radio. How do you like the new digs?
Mike, this is unbelievable. When I was on WCPT, it didn't look anything like this. You must be so happy.
Well, it's actually closer to me as well. You know, we were down on the south side, South Pulaski. And I love the south side. I love the south siders. The problem was it was just so hard to get to. Here, it's like boom-bitty-boom. What is it? Ron Cowgill says, boom, done. And, it's state of the art. And, so you get a chance to see this. Now, Robert had a show here, for a short time called Green Sense Radio, but Green Sense Radio still goes on. You're on WBBM. You do minutes on, like a green minute on WBBM, but you also do the long form show, which is half an hour.
Yes, we're on about 10 stations, not quite coast to coast. We're on the East Coast, West Coast, and the Midwest. But I really want to thank you for having me on your show. And I commend you for doing what you do and energizing the public about sustainability and talking about the environment. There's not enough of us out there. So congratulations on being on the air so long.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. It's, as you know, because you've done this, and we've had conversations about this, radio ain't easy. Okay. And, you're always looking for somebody to help keep you on the air. In my case, you know, I need my advertisers. So I tell people to support my wonderful advertisers and go frequent them and buy their products. And when you do, say you heard it on Mike's show, and you know, I don't know if you do that exactly the same way, but you know, they do that on radio, and it's important. This is how we keep this going. And my congratulations to you too, also for the same work you do. We're in similar realms. You know, I talk a little. Well, you talk about gardening too on your show, don't you?
Not so much. We cover a much broader base of issues around sustainability, energy, transportation, water, the built environment, agriculture, urban farming. It's a much broader base.
And I try to bring it back home to the one-on-one with the people out there who are planting seeds in their yards, like you heard Vicky Nowicki here earlier with, and the idea of a lending. Seed lending library is just very cool, you know. And now we're going to get to what you're doing, but I want to introduce you to Rick DeMaio, my meteorologist. You might remember Rick. He's been on television all over the area.
Sure. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, good morning, Robert. How are you? Nice to hear you, and congratulations on your success as well. I know you and Mike are one of few, but sometimes one of few have many ears, and I think the more people know about you, the more people will listen, and the more people will become educated. So as you congratulated Mike, I congratulate you as well, Robert.
Well, thank you so much, Rick, and I've heard you both on TV and on radio, and sustainability, climate change is something we cover a lot, and I'm sure that's a hot area for you these days.
Yeah, and it is, and even at Loyola University, where they have actually taken their science program and has made it more of an institute of environmental sustainability. One of the things that are being done there is they're actually transferring over the three weather and climate classes that they require the environmental studies students to take. I know you received your BS and your MS from Northeastern Illinois University in that field. One of the things that they're doing is they're actually changing the course to reflect more climate change and climate variability, and not just teaching weather and climate. I think that's what a lot of other schools need to do as well as incorporating, you know, things like GIS, geographical information systems, which is a newer, more advanced way of looking at data. And what that does is it really begins to expand the students' mindset from outside of Chicago, outside of Illinois, outside the Midwest, outside the United States, outside North America, and through other parts of the world, because we've become so global, you need to change the way that you teach and you need to change the way that you educate. So I think the way that kids are learning today is even different from how you learned it and how I learned it. And it's exciting to be, you know, kind of on the forefront of that.
One of the favorite guests on my show was James Balog. He created the documentary Chasing Ice, where mm-hmm. he put time-lapse cameras in five continents, and he filmed the glaciers over a couple of years. And it was just amazing to see how these glaciers almost deflated like balloons and shrank over the two-year period. And one of his comments was that we have to stop believing in things. We have to be using data and science to make our opinion. So when you look at what you're talking about, taking a holistic approach, I think it'll make people much more educated on how to react to climate change and global warming.
Oh, no doubt. You know, it's funny. I was listening. Yesterday I was at an event, and the sustainability director for Harper College was there. And Illinois Solar is going to be hosting an event there on Tuesday. And what's so fascinating is that they are working very hard to bring sustainability into every subject. So it's not just the environmental scientists, but it's the English, it's the math, it's the science, it's every single subject is talking about this.
And just like the U.S. Green Building Council coming out with the LEED standard, if we all do our job, we'll be out of a job, because green should be normalized into society, and that should just be the way we do things.
That's like Julie Rizzo from Recycle Granite came on my show and said, I'm trying to put myself out of work. Mm-hmm. You know, she recycles the granite because it's such a waste that they throw all the millions of pounds of scrap granite into landfills. And she said, I'd really prefer they didn't use it for countertops because it's just too wasteful. And there's a lot of energy expended in using that. But at least she's finding a way to mitigate that expenditure of energy.
And what I like about that is that there's a mindfulness about it. So it's like, okay, I'm thinking about what I'm doing and what are the implications of it. What is my waste stream? You know, do I really need this? Because what's happening downstream from it? So
Julie was just out at the farm. She's a good friend.
And, is she? I didn't know that. That's right, because she's from Indiana, too. Yeah.
We're going to use some of her recycled granite. But again, like USGBC, you see the LEED standard being assimilated into a lot of building codes. And so people are just building buildings better. And I see sustainability creeping into every facet of society. But they're going to need us to report on where the new technologies are. Mm-hmm. The world's changing.
Wait. So I actually have a purpose? This is a great thing. Well, let's get back to Rick here, though, because, Rick, you started to talk about you were at the severe weather seminar
at Fermilab yesterday. Yep.
At Fermilab, and they were not afraid to look at the bigger picture, and that's kind of where Robert comes in, because he's keeping the bigger picture in mind. I mean, he's growing food indoors, and if you're growing food indoors, you kind of take weather out of the equation.
You do.
But still, that's not, everything's not going to be grown indoors, this, you know, ultimately. So I'm kind of curious about what they were saying, at Fermilab about, some of these patterns that you, one thing that struck me, what you said last hour, is that we're getting into patterns that lock in and don't go away. How is that going to affect us?
Well, I think one of the things that we've begun to look at on the larger scale of weather is taking climate and making more or less impact type of predictions, as opposed to just saying cooler than normal or wetter than normal, but making those predictions kind of lassoed onto the current weather trend and saying that what the upcoming spring will be more of an impact on what has been occurring. So in other words, if we can look at, say, the upcoming spring and summer season for the desert Southwest in California, and this has already actually been done in the past, but they're getting a little bit more involved in actually having specific impact statements, whereas I think before it was basically climate scientists talking to climate scientists, and the National Weather Service is really more or less a function of people producing weather products, but not really climate per se products. That was always done from a different agency, but now I think some of those products are now being put into some of the daily and weekly forecasts so that we know more about what a wet spring will do following, say, a very late season cold pattern. You know, what that'll do to agriculture, what that'll do to trees, what that'll do to newly planted shrubs and things like that. And I think that's where they're beginning to go with it. And part of this, Mike and Rob, you probably know about this as well. If you look at the number of billion-dollar weather disasters over the United States, just in the last 5 years, we're close to $500 billion. Half a trillion. If you go back to 2000, we're over a trillion. You can actually go from 2000 all the way to 1900. We don't have anything close to that. So I always like to think about this as car insurance, okay? If you have a more expensive car and you're driving it a lot more in an area that has a lot more accidents, you need more insurance. So what we need to do here, part of the mitigation effort, is to have more insurance knowing that these long-term climate changes, which will become more impactful, will in the end cost us more money. And that's where sustainability and mitigation kind of become hand in hand. It's basically having insurance for the future based on the probability that something bad will happen.
Couldn't have said it better.
We also have to be much smarter with our water and land use. When you see the drought condition in California, it's endemic. It's not just a one-time event. Just my research and talking with people on the show, we're finding that the wetter places are getting wetter, the drier places are getting drier, and water seems to be moving away from the equator to the poles. So we have to be much smarter where we farm. You don't want to be using nut and fruit trees that take hundreds of gallons of water a day per tree in drought climates. And, you know, we're depleting aquifers like the Ogallala. It's a huge aquifer, but you're seeing the fringes of that at a point where we can't pump it anymore.
Well, and unfortunately, we're fracking in those areas too, and we're draining good water that should be used for civilization instead, so that we can go get cheap natural gas.
So what I've seen is that farming hasn't changed very much in the last couple hundred years, and so we're going to get much smarter about how we farm.
Well, it has changed in one, and I know you're there, Rick, and I want to just note on that. It has changed in one significant way, and that is our inputs. We've gone to synthetic chemicals.
Right.
And that changed the equation completely. And now we're beginning to realize we haven't been paying as much attention to the biology of our soil as, you know, at one point we thought, oh, we just throw NPK at everything and that's going to solve all of our problems. And now we're realizing, well, wait a second, what about the biology? And as I'd like to say, it's the biology, stupid. Rick, you were going to add?
Yeah, you know what? Actually, you know, one of the reasons why we didn't have as much of an agricultural disaster with the 2012 drought was because of the drought-resistant corn and some of the bioengineering that we've done with that. And I think that's a huge improvement, even though we haven't maybe changed certain farm practices. What we put into the soil has actually got a lot better. And one of the things that I think, universities like Loyola with their Institute of Environmental Sustainability is teaching students more about soil erosion and soil degradation in areas of like Central Africa, Central South America, where you have people who literally live year by year by year saying, okay, if this soil is going to work for me, I'm moving someplace else. Look at what we did back in the 1930s, the greatest ecological disaster in the United States. Was in the Great Plains and the Dust Bowl, all built on greed, all built on, well, if it rains, those three words, if it rains, we will have food. If it rains, we will get out of the drought. If it rains, we will no longer have dust. Well, it didn't rain for 6 years. Okay. Now we've actually changed the type of soil that we have and the type of seed to get through some of these droughts and some of these heat waves. But it doesn't mean that it's going to get any better. It'll still happen. We just have to be a little bit more aware of it.
Yeah, you're interesting, and it points to sometimes we don't act in our own self-interest. I was watching Ken Burns' wonderful documentary on the Dust Bowl. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it.
Right.
And what he points out is that when conditions were good, they planted more corn.
More wheat,
more corn, more of everything because the conditions were good. When the conditions were bad, they planted more because they needed to make up for the fact that the conditions weren't good.
Right.
So no matter what the conditions were, they were planting more and more. And eventually when the rain stopped, it stripped all of the soil. And then we had to somehow put it back. And we did. That's the other thing. We figured it out.
But, Mike, who eventually forced the farmers to change their practices?
The meteorologists?
No, it was the government.
Oh.
The government finally stepping in and saying, look,
yes.
guys, you're not doing this right. So when I hear people say the government should stay out of our lives in certain situations like this, no, because oftentimes people will not make decisions based on the best practices. They'll basically make it on greed, as you just mentioned. And I need to do this. I don't care. Stay out of my backyard. But oftentimes we need people who are smart. We need people who are intelligent. And we need people who have a purpose of just understanding the science. And that's probably the best way to think about it, and not making it become a political statement or you're right and you're wrong because you think that doing this is going to take away jobs. I don't even know why those conversations ever got started. Do you know, the last two cents in here, that they are about 2 months away from not being able to provide Las Vegas and Phoenix, Arizona, with enough drinking water because the intake valves in the Hoover Dam that connected to Lake Mead are getting dangerously low? They may actually have to, over the next 4 to 6 months, lower the intake valves to have water given to those cities. Can you imagine if all of a sudden you're in Phoenix or in Las Vegas and you have no drinking water? Then people begin to realize how serious the situation has become in certain situations, not everywhere.
If they stop watering the golf courses in Vegas, I'm serious.
And the huge fountains. Right?
And the fountains and using potable water, which is obscene. It's obscene.
The swimming pools.
Yeah. And they're going to find out when the water goes dry that the paradigm is going to have to shift.
Right. The first person who develops powdered water is going to be a genius, right?
Except we won't have anything to mix it with.
Oh, that's no. Okay, I had to throw the. Oh, I didn't have it here. The drum roll, but
well, as a recovering hydrogeologist, water's still my passion, and it's always been the belief that we don't have a water shortage problem; we have a water management problem. And you've just illustrated that with some of the bad uses of water, and we're going to get much smarter.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Robert, at Northeastern Illinois University, where they have an environmental science program, are they becoming more aware of changing their curriculum and going more towards sustainability, or is it still done the same way? Have you had any input on that or knowledge of that?
I'm not sure. I haven't been involved with the university for about 20 years, so I'm not sure how the curriculum has changed. And when I started, hydrogeology was somewhat of a new field. And I worked a lot. One of the things that I did was augment my education with hands-on experience. Working at the Field Museum, working at Argonne National Labs, you know, allowed me to really do a lot of different research projects. So I'm not sure what the university's doing.
I think that's one of the best things in the world is being an organization or a university or some sort of a department or a research center that has to change based on the times, because that makes it more interesting and also more challenging.
Well, I was just out at University of Arizona with Dr. Giacomelli, who runs the Controlled Environmental Agriculture Center in Tucson. And they are out in a desert area growing crops using indoor technology. And he's really one of the leaders in the U.S.
Using indoor technology.
He's got a grant from NASA. They're working on the indoor food chamber for the Mars mission. They're doing all sorts of research.
Send me, please. I would like to go.
Just fascinating when I was out there. I said, you got to pinch yourself. I mean, you're working on technology that's going to keep people alive out in space. And, you know, we're at a point right now that we can create Groundhog Day inside a facility. The climate is the same every day when you control indoor agriculture. And it's so fascinating and exciting because we're right on the forefront of a new way to grow.
And that's that's the segue. Rick, I'm going to let you go so that I can talk to Robert about his operation.
Good.
Always a pleasure. And thank you for your insight, your additional insight this week.
No problem. Just put more money in the offering basket next time it comes around.
Rick, nice talking to you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, Rick.
Bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. That was Rick DeMaio, our meteorologist, stuck around for a little extra. I wanted to introduce him to Robert Colangelo, who is with Green Sense Radio and also Green Sense Farms. We're going to be talking about Green Sense Farms in just a second, so hang on. Now, even if the new spring season is happening slower – than you would like, Christy Weber Farm and Garden wants you to stop in and be inspired. Then go out and create something wonderful, whether it's in your yard, on your porch, or even in your living room. Yeah, they have indoor tropicals, of course. They have a new website. Just go to CWFNG.com. Or spell it out, Christy Weber Farm and Garden.com. Either one will get you there. And they've changed the hours of their Thursday evening classes. They now happen at 7 p.m., not 6 p.m. It's a little easier for folks to get there after work. This Thursday, April 10, stop in and learn about forging a new relationship with bees. If you can't make it in person, go to the useful info page on their website, where you'll also find information about seed starting, fertilizing, chicken fun facts, planting spring bulbs, and more. Think CWFNG, think Christy Weber Farm and Garden, 2200 West Grand Avenue in Chicago. Find them on Facebook or go to CWFNG.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-LUNG-LAW. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
You could wait until you have a full-blown insect problem in your garden, but why would you? There's a way to nip harmful garden insects in the bud, so to speak. Bonide's All Seasons Dormant and Horticultural Spray Oil stops garden insects before they hatch. It's easy to use, and it's an all-natural product that can be used all season long. But you know what? Interesting, because our spring is so late, you've got a little extra time to apply that. Generally, this part of the season comes and goes really quickly where you can use dormant oils. But things have been dormant and continue to be dormant as we've had the cool weather when things warm up, and then you're going to watch things pop. So take advantage of this right now. Early spraying smothers most eggs left behind by last year's plant-destroying insects. And if you use Bonide's all-season spray oil throughout the gardening season, it will control all stages of the insects. It's recommended for use on shade trees, fruit trees, shrubs, roses, and ornamental plants. You'll find Bonide all-seasons oil at Countryside Flower Shop in Crystal Lake, Kinch Village Florist in Palatine, and Matson Ace Hardware in Coal City, or visit Bonide.com to locate a retailer near you.
When gardening is part of your life, it brings so much. Healthy eating, the freshest, most local produce, and playing in the dirt. At BonniePlants.com, you'll find all you need to succeed. When you grow Bonnie veggie and herb plants in beds or containers, you'll know where your food comes from. Homegrown veggies and herbs ready for cooking, eating, and enjoying. And you did it. So get growing with Bonnie Plants.
I got a crazy teacher, he wears dark glasses. Things are going great.
And they're only getting better.
I'm doing all right, getting good grades. The future's so bright.
Oh, yeah.
I gotta wear shades.
You know, that's the antithesis song to what we were talking about last week. You know, just keep playing this music.
Last week.
Just keep playing this music and everything will be better, right?
I'm erasing it.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. You know, I didn't say hi to Lisa Albrecht, whose studio today, as Carol Brewer is in the big booth. Say hi, Carol. I want people to know that you're here, too.
Uh-oh.
You got to turn
there
on your mic.
Microphone.
Okay.
Just hit all those buttons.
Well,
hit them all.
Never-ending disappearing mic for me.
Yeah, that. Well, I noticed you're holding the thing down because it keeps popping up. And but you're here.
But
that's
I
good.
Am here.
And Robert Colangelo is in the studio, too. It's an honor to have you here. I'm so glad that you came by. He's with Green Sense Farms. And as we said, this is the future of some kind of farming. It's not going to replace all outdoor farming, but you're doing it indoors. I've seen the operation. It's vertical farming, meaning that you've got trays stacked to the ceiling with stuff that you're growing, with seeds and seedlings. You're using artificial lights. You're using nutrients that you prepare and feed in there in specific quantities. I mean, it's all, as you said earlier, the weather don't enter into it because there you are in an indoor situation, and it sounds like it's going great.
Our future is so bright. We got to wear shades.
We got to wear shades.
Also, because the LED lights are purple and red, and it makes it look green, so the shades help see clearly, right? As so, you know, when you walked out of there.
Well, and I will say something, and you say what you can say, but it's proprietary technology that you're using, you're employing right now.
We developed this all on our own. We started out with building a grow room. It's roughly 25 feet tall by 60 feet by 60 feet. In there, we have 7 grow towers. We have 2 grow rooms, and we can control the climate in each grow room. One is kept cooler and drier, less humid, so we can grow lettuces. The other grow room is a little hotter and a little bit more humid so that we can grow leafy greens and herbs. And in the grow room, we control everything. As I said, it's Groundhog Day. You walk in today, or you walk in when it's 40 below zero outside, and it's always 70-degree temperature, about 65% humidity. And we control the lights, we control the water, we control the nutrients, and we reduce, reuse, and recycle everything.
It's just, it's unbelievable.
So right now, I think we can grow leafy greens, lettuces, and herbs very well. Over time, we'll be able to possibly grow some fruits and other vegetables, tomatoes, strawberries. And
tomatoes seems like that would be a little more problematic because the way you've got it set up now, the leafy greens, they're very compact, most of them. It's easy to control. Tomato sprawls a little more. I mean, you're obviously investigating how to work that out.
Well, we're working very closely with Purdue and, again, Dr. Giacomelli at the Controlled Environmental Ag Center. And Dr. Kerry Mitchell down at Purdue has got a way to use LED lights where you stack them vertical instead of horizontal. So you get the lights directing on the tomato canopy down low as well as on the top.
So the tomato is producing throughout the whole plant, not just at the terminus there, you know, the terminal buds, you know.
So I think you're going to see more and more advancements. Our head grower, Lane Patterson, who worked down at the South Pole, where growing indoors was the only way you were going to get fresh vegetables, he grew about 14 different varieties of fruits and plants and vegetables.
Uh-huh.
So we know that you can do that. He did it on a very small scale. The trick is being able to do it on a commercial scale. And that's where we
That's where you're coming in. You're attempting to do this commercially.
Yes.
And because you get the warehouse is huge, but at some point, you've got two grow chambers in there. If you wanted more, would you have to go to another warehouse?
We have room to expand within our facility, but our goal is to be the largest commercial farm. We're well located, close to highway access. We can serve a 5-state area and still be considered locally grown. We have the capacity to produce about 1.5 million pounds, about 3 million plants a year, and it is really set up for a production capacity. I think urban farming is a little bit of a misnomer. You can do it on a research basis. You could do it on a nonprofit basis. You could do it on a hobby basis. But to do it commercially inside an inner city, your inputs are way too expensive. Land costs too much. It's hard to transport your inputs in, and it's hard to get your outputs out on a volume basis. We're set up to produce truckloads of produce on a weekly basis. It's hard to do that on a urban farm.
You're talking about outdoor urban farm. Or what about an indoor urban farm?
Indoor urban farm, it comes down to dollars per square foot. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find space in an inner city where you're leasing it at a rate that you can do farming.
Well, you can't say that it's not worthwhile at all to do urban farming. It's got to have some purpose. But you're saying in terms of scale, it just can't match.
I'm saying doing it on a commercial basis where you're doing large volumes. Mm-hmm. As I said, you could do it on a research basis. You could do it on a hobby basis. You can do it on a nonprofit basis where you're serving a small community. But to try to ramp it up where you're doing it on a large scale commercial production, even our facility's small. We need to.
That's what I was thinking. As much as you're going to produce and are producing already, because you haven't planted everything yet in the building.
No.
But I would think you could have a whole park full of buildings like that producing food. And that is the ultimate in local food. As you say, you're based in Portage, Indiana, and the advantage of being there is the, you know, Indiana, what's the they say on the tollway, the crossroads of Mid-America.
Of America, yeah. The heartland. We could service 20 million people in the Chicago metro market. This is a very large, one of the second or third largest metropolitan markets in the country. So by just increasing our capacity, we can serve a large area and don't have to travel very many food miles to get that from our farm to people's plate. And that's the real advantage. We have two advantages. One, we go up. That's really the revolutionary or paradigm-changing process here. Instead of farming horizontally, we've taken it up so we can get 10 times the yield as a traditional farm. And then we get 17 to 26 harvests per year. We're harvesting every other week on some crops, where a farmer is only harvesting once, two, or three times a year. So not only do we have a higher density, but we're getting much more turnaround. So we have so much more productivity. But even at that high productivity, our farm at full capacity is about 1,000 cases a week. That's still a drop in the bucket. Someone like a Costco takes 2,500 cases a week. So So our plans are to really ramp up production on a continual basis as we get our crop mix to the customer needs.
Now, is this vertical as well?
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Vertical.
It's all
their stack. All of it is vertical.
Yeah, okay. It's all
so
vertical.
So couldn't you – okay, so I know you said that real estate is one of the factors, so square footage. What about all the closed Chicago school buildings? Couldn't we use like those to grow food for the Chicago public school system?
I think that all sounds great in concept, but at the end of the day, just being in the environmental field my whole career, you know, not all green is good. It all starts out, it has to make economic sense before it makes environmental, and it has to make common sense. My past profession was dealing with brownfields, taking contaminated properties and redeveloping those. So I've looked at a lot of buildings that are functionally obsolete or contaminated, and the problem comes is they typically don't have the right ceiling heights. Mm. We need large open space with high ceiling heights, and you have to have good access to the expressways to do this on a volume basis. So you might end up looking at thousands of buildings to find that one building that works? So the answer is yes. There's probably one or two out there, but the site selection process may be voluminous. It took us 2 years to find this building that had the right access to the expressway, it had the right functionality, and it was at the right price.
So do you think it would be better than to start from scratch and find the location and build?
Yes, and that's our phase two. We want to be as energy independent as possible. Our next phase is to have a geothermal heat pump and solar panels.
So it's going to be one of my other questions. Yeah. With those LED lighting, are you putting solar to work so you're at least putting the sun to work in some fashion in growing this food?
That's phase two. When we build our own building, we have a much better way to build this and engineer it so that we're energy independent. And it puts us in a much more sustainable position.
When does that happen?
Soon.
Depends on the
We're in expansion plans. We're doing a private offering to raise additional capital. And there's just been a lot of interest in what we're doing. We officially opened April 1st. We're already ahead of capacity on our orders. And we've got lots of calls from investors these days. And so we're just sorting through all that. As I said, our future's bright.
It is.
Wear those shades.
That's Robert Colangelo from GreenSense Farms. When you approach your buyers, is it a hard sell?
No. What we have seen out
and
there,
what I meant, a difficult sell, not you putting the hard sell on them. I'm saying, is it easy to sell them on the concept?
So we've gone after the top of the food pyramid. If you look at all the produce that's sold, at the top of the pyramid, there's a group of educated consumers that appreciate chemical-free, pesticide-free, non-GMO, organically grown produce, like Whole Foods. We specifically put our facility within 30 minutes of the Whole Food Distribution Center that serves an 8-state area, and we sell directly to them. We sell to other outlets that deal with organic and locally grown foods. We deal with restaurants that appreciate fresh, locally grown food. Where are you going to get locally grown produce in February in the Chicagoland market? So what we found was the first trend was organic. The second trend was locally grown. Now it's year-round availability.
Mm-hmm.
There's very few people that can provide produce. So I don't look as if we have any competitors out there. We're all in this together to try to figure out how to achieve those three goals: locally grown, organic, and year-round.
But speaking of competitors, is anybody doing it on this kind of scale?
People are out there doing it, but not at the scale we're doing it and not at the capitalization and the technology that we're employing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we see working with these universities to constantly develop new technologies. So that we're constantly pushing the edge here, growing a wider variety of product and being more sustainable is really the future.
Do you see bringing in students, say, from Purdue to look at the operation, take it back to the campus and develop more and work on this?
Our innovation partner is Philips, the electronics company out of the Netherlands, and we have research projects on the schedule to come up with different light recipes for different crops so that we're developing LED lights that are specific to a crop type. And that is something that we want to work with Purdue.
So you're going to have specific lights for specific – that's just amazing. We're a long way from the shop light and the fluorescent tube and growing your seedlings underneath that.
And we're also working with Dr. Giacomelli on organic fertilizers using organic food waste that we can process to make sure it's clean and pathogen-free, that it would be used to use as a fertilizer to enhance our production.
So – what's interesting about this is the idea that you are doing this organically because it's so high tech, and you don't think of organics and high tech coming together like that. Are you going to be at some point certified organic? Are you already?
Our challenge right now is everything we do is organic except our fertilizer. Most people doing hydroponic or a thin film technology are using either fish waste or fish byproducts or ground up plants. And with our system,
like they are at the plant on the south side, the aquaponics
businesses, and farmed here, that's problematic in our view. That potentially can cause a lot of bacteria. It's a hard system to maintain. You're dealing with two biologies. You know,
you've got lots of variables there, don't
living,
you?
Living, exactly. Yeah. And you don't get the intense nutrients that you get out of traditional fertilizer. So we're working on that right now. One of the things we use is coconut coir. It's ground coconut.
C-O-I-R.
Yes.
And nobody knows how to pronounce it. It's a choir,
I've heard it pronounced many different ways.
Yeah,
but it's a renewable resource. It comes from the coconuts, and it does not act as a soil. It just provides a medium in which the roots can grow, and then our nutrients pass through that. So putting organic into a system where there's not carbon creates complex problems and challenges. But I also look at those as opportunities, because we're going to figure a way to come up with a proprietary fertilizer that's going to cause our system to grow. This is a very complex system that deals with CO2, lights, water, nutrient, temperature, humidity, and that's where we control all those factors.
Yeah, it's amazing. I went and saw the operation, you were telling me there about controlling the amount of CO2 in the air. It's like unbelievable stuff you could never do outside.
We produce an oxygen-rich environment. Plants need CO2. That's why they're good for global warming and climate change. They sequester the carbon. And in an environment where CO2 is not pumped in, it becomes very oxygen-rich, and the plants can't grow properly. So we pump in CO2, they produce oxygen. So it's a great carbon sequestration facility. And I dropped you off two obscure herbs.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned these, yes.
You know, one is a chervil. It's a French parsley. It has a really delicate, light licorice taste. It's good for seasoning and flavoring mild dishes like seafood, poultry, soups, sauces, even vegetable dishes like fresh carrots. And the other one is a mouth-watering dill. It's great with seafood. And what comes to my mind is sour cream and salmon. Herbs can also be used for medicinal uses. And that dill is good for easing gas in your stomach, bloating, and settling stomach issues. So these herbs have both...
Dr. Colangelo
well,
gives you advice.
What I like is that we make people happy. People like to see us. They like to eat fresh vegetables. We produce all those vegetables that your mother told you to eat. And I have to give a shout-out to my grandmother and my mother. Both my grandmother was an excellent cook, and so is my mother. And they taught us at a young age that if you want to make a great dish, it starts with fresh ingredients. And so that's what we love to do at Green Sense Farms. You know, grow fresh ingredients that are good for you. They're nutritious. They're delicious. And they make people happy.
This is great. And you've got your own little package here. And you've got, although it says chives on it, I don't know.
Yeah, we didn't have the chervil. I didn't get the chervil bag, so I tossed that in there.
The chives bag. But it says locally grown, pesticide-free, preservative-free, GMO-free. It's a live plant. I can plant this.
And you know what's the best thing about that? It's made in America. People complain we don't make enough here in America. That's made in America every day, 365 days a year. And you could find those at Whole Foods.
That's amazing. Yeah, look for green. Now, do you have, does it say Green? Well, it says Portage, Indiana.
On the back of the label.
There we are, Green Sense Farms. There's your logo. So look for Green Sense Farms at Whole Foods. And where else might they find it?
Streck and Van Til, and we're just working on a number of other stores, and we'll talk maybe in the future, and you'll see us.
We will. You are going to be back here. Well, stick around, because we've got Kate Sackman coming in, and you've interviewed her, and...
Yes, we had her, the Eco Mythbusters. I think what she's doing is fantastic. She's been on the show. But, Mike, again, I just want to thank you and your staff here for having us on. Keeping the word out there on the environment and sustainability is very important. We can't get complacent. It seems like people don't pay attention until there's an ecological disaster. So our job's to keep the issue on people's mind all the time. So good luck and good job.
You too. You know, and you're not only talking the talk, you're walking the walk.
It's a love fest in here.
It is.
Well, and this is why I have hope. This is why Guy McPherson's wrong. There's people like this out there.
Well, and I see the world as, look at all the good we've been doing. You can look at the bad, but I look at technology, innovation, and creativity is our solution. And America's a resilient country. We're going to do it.
That's my hope.
That's the way. No. Well, let's bust some myths here, and we will do that in just a moment.
Celebrate Earth Month with WCPT and a live on-location broadcast of The Mike Novak Show at the Green Metropolis Fair on Sunday, April 27th at the Irish American Heritage Center on Chicago's North Side. You'll enjoy workshops on organic gardening and sustainable living, yoga classes, activities for kids, great food, and a retail marketplace filled with hundreds of ecological products and services. Admission and parking are free. So what do you think, Mike? Did we cover it all?
Hold on there, Mr. Announcer Dude. You neglected to mention the website, GreenMetropolisFair.com, and my showtime, which is every Sunday from 9 to 11 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, and that during the live remote broadcast, I'll have a number of great guests from the fair to talk about sustainable living and gardening. Other than that, I think you did okay. I'll give you an 8.5 out of 11. I mean 10.
Okay, good. So join us at the fair, and who knows, Mike might even put you on the radio. Learn all about it at GreenMetropolisFair.com. That's GreenMetropolisFair.com.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Do you know what you could be doing next Saturday if you had a Purple Leaf Farm CSA? You could be hanging out at the farm in Elgin, planting seedlings, taking a few home, and chowing down on free lunch and snacks. And it's not too late for you to join in. Here's how it works. You pay up front to help the farm get their crops in the ground and harvested. And when they're ready for harvest, guess who gets the first choice? Yes, that's you. If you sign on with Purple Leaf Farms, starting and they're old school. They're not like a Colangelo here with the high tech stuff. They're old school, but I love them because they're old school. And starting in late June or early July, you begin receiving shipments of produce that are fresher than fresh. They employ organic methods, no synthetic chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, or synthetic fertilizers. You'll receive 6 types of vegetables, 2 types of herbs, and 1 large mixed flower bouquet every week for 15 weeks. Seriously? Fresh flowers every week? I'm on board. And next Saturday, if you happen to feel like it, you could get your hands dirty on their farm. Order a CSA from Purple Leaf Farms today. You will not be disappointed. For more information, including the workday next week, go to purpleleaffarms.com or call 312-437-7542, 312-437-7542.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Life has come a long way.
Oh, yeah.
Since yesterday.
And Robert Colangelo is still in the studio, but Kate Sackman is here, too. And it's a pleasure to meet you. And I'm glad to, you know, this sounds like a group that I'm going to have back on the program. You're definitely going to have to come back because you're the founder and president of Eco Myths.
That's right.
And your whole deal is let's get some truth out there. Let's talk about the things that really aren't that get presented the wrong way and bust those myths. And I love that idea. So welcome. How'd you come about with that idea?
Well, it started several years ago when I was volunteering and serving on the board. I'm still serving on the board, Lake Forest Open Lands Association. I was running the Conservation Science Committee. We had scientists from all over the region, and over the years we realized it was difficult to get people engaged in the science that was going on in the properties to help people share stewardship with us to be more creative and positive in their interactions with the property. So we thought, what if we busted some myths to get them interested? And quickly, there were scientists and environmental educators from all over the region that were interested in doing this. And so within a couple of months, we created EcoMyths Alliance to bust these myths.
I was surprised. I mentioned it earlier in the show because I had Melinda Myers on, and one of your myths was busting the idea. I mean, you go from the sublime to the ridiculous, and the whole idea that thatch is caused by grass clippings on your lawn seems one of those silly things, but people are concerned about that, and they don't know the truth, and you do things like that.
And they haul off the clippings that go into the landfill, and then that's a totally unnecessary use of a landfill, when, in fact, if you leave your clippings on the lawn, it actually fertilizes the lawn.
That's free fertilizer for you. You just pump it right back in. The reason you're here, and I'm telling you, you're going to be back, Kate, because I want to go through some of these myths. We don't have a lot of time today, but so let's get to what you're doing this week on the 8th, Tuesday, April 8th, and it is Naturally Funny Gala featuring the Second City. How did you get Second City involved?
Well, we are very excited to be starting an education program, and Second City is going to be a part of it. For the past 4 years, we've just been busting myths for the public, and now we're going to be creating video shorts with Second City that bust myths that are going to be funny and subversively.
I was hoping
science.
That we would have one for the show that I could play the audio, but
I wish.
Next time we'll have that.
Hopefully.
You haven't created those yet.
We haven't created those videos yet. That's part of the purpose of the gala. We're working with the National Wildlife Federation to build a curriculum of 12 lessons, and each of them will be accompanied by a myth-busting video.
So folks can come to this event, which is from 6 to 9 p.m. on Tuesday. It's at the Up Comedy Club, Second City, 230 West North Avenue, third floor. They can find out information about that on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, or they can go to your website, EcoMyths Alliance, and that's EcoMyths Alliance, ECOMYTHS Alliance.org. I have to ask you, of the myths you've busted, what stands out in your mind? Is there any, or a couple, where you thought that there were almost personal missions? It's like, we've got to change that. We got to get that word out.
Oh, the thing that bothers me most of all the stuff that we put into the waterways. It just drives me crazy. You know, for instance, people think it's okay to pour their unused medicines down the toilet. And in fact, that used to be the FDA recommendation. But so when people have unused medications, they often...
That's insane. The USDA recommendation? That's crazy.
Yeah, well, it's FDA because they want prevent drugs from getting into the hands of people who will abuse them, either intentionally or otherwise. And in fact, the FDA still recommends it for narcotics. But generally speaking, the Drug Enforcement Agency actually has pickup days. So things like that get into the water.
In Chicago, you can take them to any of the police districts, and they've started collecting those. And that's very helpful.
Right. So, and, you know, there are a lot of other things that we put into our waterways, and we don't think about the fact that when we pour stuff down the drain, it actually ends up in our drinking water in very diluted form.
We don't know the effect of that, and that's part of the problem, is that, you know, people talk about waste and treating waste, there are things we can take out of the water, but we really don't know the effect of the pharmaceuticals that get in there.
Yeah, and actually a lot of the chemicals just simply can't be dealt with in the normal waste treatment process.
Mm-hmm. I will mention that at your gala, Naturally Funny Gala.
Yes.
Are you going to, Second City will be performing,
they
of course.
They will, for a whole hour from 8 to 9 p.m.
It'll are they going to do any eco-myth improvs?
It's going to depend on what the audience feeds them. I'm sure that they, you know, they know.
Well, you got to plant people in the audience and say, do an eco-myth.
I don't think that we'll have to plant them. I think they'll ask for it.
Uh-huh. And out of this, you will start doing the videos. What's your time frame on that?
Well, it depends on how soon we raise the funds that are necessary. But I think we'll raise a significant chunk tonight. And then
Tuesday?
I'm sorry, Tuesday night. Sorry.
That's okay. I want to make sure people get, they know they have a
couple of days
get on board with this and be part of it.
Yep.
You know that man on the right, but you guys have never met.
We've never met. We've talked over the phone, and Robert interviewed me over the phone some months ago.
But I got to say, Mike, unlike you and I, she's got a face for TV.
Yeah, but there are no cameras here. That's part of our problem. I just think this is a wonderful deal, and I would encourage people to go to Eco Myths Alliance, some of the ones that I linked here are Monarchs and GMO Foods Are Unrelated, Winter Wildlife Doesn't Need Our Help, mm-hmm. Fresh Cafeteria Food Is an Oxymoron. I guess you would have something to say about that, Robert. We're running out of time. In a couple of sentences, Kate, why is that an oxymoron? Why is it not an oxymoron?
It's not an oxymoron because school districts all over the country are growing their own food and making priority to bring fresh food into the cafeteria where they haven't made a priority before.
And I know we're working with a produce company to get fresh produce to a lot more universities.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, folks, we're done. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Lisa. What I'm going to say is go green and then you say go home. Go green or
go home.
That works.